Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Buckley, your host for Open Government Radio. Today is March 16th, 2010. And if you are listening live or whether you're listening after the fact, the best thing to do to follow along with today's show is to go to my blog, which is ustransparency.com. And if you go there, you'll see the better discussion of what we'll be talking about today. I'll go into that in a second, along with the links that we'll be going to as we go along with the discussion and so forth and so on. You would be actually be looking at Open Government Radio posting for that I put up on March 15th yesterday, but it's about the show today. And anyway, I said before we get into that, I do want to point out that this is the last week for federal agencies who are receiving or inviting ideas from anyone inside the government, outside the government, who has ideas on how to make federal agencies more transparent, participatory, and collaborative in accordance with the Open Government Directive that was issued by the White House through the Office of Management and Budget. And so if you have an idea that you want to you want to share on how to make the executive branch of government work better for you and for everyone else, and then the idea is to go to any government agency website, and if it's, for instance, General Services Administration, that would be gsa.gov/open. And, of course, Environmental Protection Agency would be epa.gov/open, and follow the links for any information there on how to provide your ideas. And that, I believe, would probably close up on Friday at midnight, I guess. That's the last day. So I just wanted to make sure people were aware of that. I even have a few ideas that I've been putting off, and nothing concentrates the mind like a deadline. So anyway, we may hear from some people from GSA before the hour is up, and I just wanted to, and I'll take their calls when as time allows, but I wanted people to be aware of that. So now we go back to the theme for today, and if you all remember, a couple weeks ago I had three authors on who were featured in the most recent issue of the International Journal of Public Participation, and the theme of that particular issue was on the Obama administration's open government effort. And you will see that if you are following along on ustransparency.com, for the posting, you'll see there's a number of the explanation about that issue, what the theme is, and the one of the three authors for today, I decided it was the three letters, the three articles, that is, that was in that article that I thought were the most interesting. No disrespect to the other authors there, but I picked those three, and we, like I said, we spoke with them 2 weeks ago, but each of their papers, I think, deserves a lot more discussion. So if you go there and you see there's a link, link number one is a paper by Thomas Breyer, who's a assistant professor at the University of Central Florida. Dr. Breyer, that is written a paper entitled President Obama, Public Participation, and an Agenda for Research and Experimentation. And if you, I'll introduce him, but if you want to go ahead and click on that link, it's only about, I think it's 4 or 5 pages. It's not that long, but we'll probably be referring to different parts of his paper, along with the part about what he his concern about a democracy bubble. So anyway, I'm going to pull him into the conversation here, and please feel free for those of you after we get going. I will take your calls. You can call in at the phone call-in number is 917-388-4210. So I'm going to Dr. Breyer introduce himself now. Are you there, Tom?
I am. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon. Okay. Like I said, I've kind of set this up, and hopefully people have pulled up your paper there and are might have even looked at it before today's thing. But for those people who are just pulling it up now, maybe you can... let's see. Oh, the link. That's right. I'm sorry. I provided a link to the abstract, so that makes it even better. I guess you can either read your own abstract or make it, you know, go ahead. I'll toss the ball over to you and tell us about what prompted you to write that and what you're trying to get across and so forth and so on, and we'll kick it around and see who calls in.
Sure.
And, so go right
well,
ahead.
Well, what we tried to do with this symposium issue of the International Journal of Public Participation is to bring together a diversity of of voices and perspectives on how well the Obama administration is doing so far with respect to enhancing public participation and openness and collaboration and transparency in the federal government within federal agencies and so on. In this entire symposium issue, we brought together folks looking at the open government initiatives of the Obama administration, as well as folks from outside of the United States who offered some insights on what might be learned in Europe based on the actions of the Obama administration and vice versa. What can the Obama administration possibly learn from the what has happened at the national government level in European countries? So for listeners who have not looked at the entire issue and the other articles that are within it, I would encourage visiting the journal website, IJP2.org, and you can access the full set of articles. What I try to do in my particular piece, though, is to set the tone, set an agenda, for research and practice moving forward. Clearly, 1 year in is not enough for the administration to develop a full track record of how it's doing and how well it's doing in terms of public participation and so on. But there's enough that has happened in the administration that has given us the opportunity to step back and say, how are they doing? What mistakes have they made, or where have they not gone far enough, and what can be done to improve practice for not only the effectiveness of government, but for the benefit of citizens, as citizens seek to engage and become empowered through the various mechanisms the administration has made available so far.
And what are the highlights? I mean, as far as what they've done. I think we've heard a lot about what they think they've done right. And certainly, yes, I think I agree that a year is a healthy amount of time to look back and see what's working, what's not working. I don't think we should wait until year three.
Mm-hmm.
That might be too late.
Right.
But,
well, one thing I say to audiences I speak to and students and others on a regular basis is that the Obama administration has been one of the most innovative administrations in U.S. history in terms of how they have sought to engage the public in open government in new and different ways, particularly given the advancements in social media and internet technologies over the past recent history. So they have really showed some great leadership in trying new things, experimenting with new technologies and new social formats in order to engage citizens in conversations where they may not have been engaged before. And that's something that we should applaud, and it's something that we should look to and not be unabashedly advocating in terms of their just a blind trust cheerleader of what the administration is doing. But at the same time, we shouldn't be critical and overly critical and say they're doing it all wrong. They need to recreate everything they've done so far. There's a balance that needs to be struck from the perspective of the scholarly community and the activist citizen community when we look at the administration and say, what have they done? How well are they doing? And what can be done better? I'll give one example. My first encounter, or one of my first encounters with the Obama administration with respect to their innovation in public participation came during the transition period between the Bush and Obama administrations, when the transition team, led by the individual at that particular time who was thought to be the leading candidate for Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Daschle, made a call out to citizens around the country to convene a community health care forum. At that point in time, it was known by Obama and his team that health care reform and health insurance reform were going to be important issues for the administration, and they were going to be promoting an agenda of reform in the health care sector. And so what they did at that point in time was ask citizens to convene community health care forums. Basically, they asked citizens to bring together their neighbors, their colleagues, their family, their friends at a place and time of their choosing. This is back in December and early January of 2008, 2009. The administration or the transition team provided some discussion questions for the citizens to consider. Provided some tips as to how to facilitate the conversation and so on. Citizens, approximately 3,200, I think 3,270-ish, citizens convened healthcare forums around the country, submitted a report back to the transition team, and the administration later, HHS specifically, released a report that offered an analysis of what citizens are thinking with respect to healthcare reform, what kinds of stories were on the minds, or experiences were on the minds of citizens as the administration sought to create an agenda for policy. So that was, in many ways, an innovative approach to engaging the public. Typically, in any kind of policy-making environment, a government will say, we're going to have a town hall meeting, we're going to have a government meeting. At this time, at this place, this is the agenda. Come and give us your statements. We'll listen to what you say at this time, at this place, and so on. If you can't make it, we're sorry. That's all there is to it. But with this social innovation, this co-production of a citizen participation process, the citizens were able to engage in a way they would not have been able to before. That's a very positive thing. Unfortunately, the record has shown, as the healthcare debate has gone on over the past year plus, is that the administration really, at least to my knowledge, has not used those data, has not used those insights and experiences of citizens from those 3,200-plus community forums that were convened. And that is something of a shame. And that walks to one of the points that I raise in my essay, which is whether or not we're creating, or the administration is creating, something of a democracy bubble. Through something like the healthcare community forums, through something like the Open Government Project and the opportunities for citizens to offer input or ideas as to how government can be become more open, more transparent, and more collaborative, and so on. Are we setting, or is the administration setting expectations at a high enough level that one, cannot be met by the administration in practice, or two, cannot be met qualitatively by citizens, or if citizens are not fully prepared to engage at the level that the administration might be seeking them to engage. And if either is the case, then what we might be creating or seeing be created here is this idea of the democracy bubble. A lot is moving into it. A lot of trust may be developed or developing within this new call for public participation and this new openness and transparency. But unless the proper institutional mechanisms are put in place, the bubble can burst, leaving both government and citizens worse off than they were moving into this this whole process. And just to give us a little bit more background on this idea of the bubble, we can compare it to the housing bubble, which we have heard so much about, obviously, with this down economy, the housing bubble being at the being perhaps the root cause or one of the root causes of the current economic situation we find ourselves in. Before this housing bubble emerged, there were large segments of the population who were unable to buy a house. We've seen the data on this, and we see the different demographics of individuals who could not afford financing, could not qualify for financing, couldn't come up with a 10 or 20% down to buy a house, and so on. But ultimately, some changes were made, regulatory changes and banking changes that allowed individuals who were otherwise not qualified or not able to participate in the housing house purchase market were able to do so. And once they moved in, a bubble developed, prices went up, and the system showed that it could not sustain that level of involvement in the housing market. And so the bubble burst, and we all know the result of that. So we ask the same question with respect to public participation. What exactly is our baseline now? With the housing market, the baseline was citizens of different walks of life were not able to buy a house for various reasons. It became easier to buy a house, and that flooded the market, the bubble burst, and people were left worse off than they were to begin with. With public participation, what do we know? We know that citizens do not trust government. We know that the trend for trust in government has generally been on a decline, at the very least since the late 1950s, early 1960s. Trust in government is low. There are occasional spikes in trust in government given different circumstances that occur. Immediately following September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, trust in government spiked but quickly went back down. So there are moments when trust in government increases, but by and large we're seeing continued decline in how citizens trust government. Survey research has shown that citizens tend to think of government as the government rather than our government. They don't take ownership of what government does. They don't see a reflection of themselves in government agencies. The scholarly community has labeled this low level of trust and this the versus our government phenomenon as examples of citizens being demobilized, that civil society and civic engagement is increasingly becoming professionalized, where citizens don't have a role to play, a meaningful role to play in the affairs of state. And so that's the baseline where we are now. And now enter the Obama administration. And they have created systems and innovations where they have sought to make it easier for the people, for the citizens to participate through web-based means, through social means like holding community forums at a time and place of their choosing, like the healthcare community forums. So it's becoming much easier for citizens to participate. The costs of participation are much lower with these innovations that the Obama administration is introducing. Just like the housing market, it became much easier for citizens to enter the housing market and purchase a home where they were not qualified to do so previously. That's the question that we have here. Is it now, one of the questions, is it now too easy for citizens to engage? And if it is too easy, are they prepared well enough to engage in a meaningful way where they can actually affect some kind of positive change, some kind of positive difference? And if not, then they'll find quickly that they may not be able to affect the change that they thought they could based upon the rhetoric and the promises of the Obama administration and others. And so the trust that develops based on that baseline of low trust might actually reverse itself and back lower than the already low levels of trust. And there may be a further decline in feelings that citizens can make a difference if they do show up. That's the overall fear that I have, that we're moving so quickly that it's becoming too easy, potentially, for citizens to participate in a meaningful way, that citizens are not prepared, and also government may not be prepared to manage this onslaught of citizen activism, particularly citizen activism among citizens who are not fully qualified, not fully prepared to be active citizens in that sense.
Mm-hmm. The adjective that I see in describing, you know, 1 year later things, a lot of the press releases or blog releases, as they're probably more accurately called, from the White House, is unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is never, meaning, of course, this has never been done before, which is great to try out new things.
Mm-hmm.
But just because something's unprecedented doesn't mean it's a good thing. It could be an unprecedented failure. So unprecedented, you know, yes, but unprecedented in a good way or a bad way or a mixed bag and so forth and so on. So but I continue to see that being trotted out as, well, since it's unprecedented, it must be good.
Right.
And A for effort, I would give them A for effort. Certainly, no, I don't think anybody is accusing them of foot dragging as far as using new social media tools and so forth. But at the same time, how did that work? That's the, I think, the bubble, you know, you don't really know when you're in a bubble. And a lot of times there's denials when you're in the bubble. I think you were using the housing bubble as an example. Everybody kind of knew that, well, you know, maybe we are in a bubble because, you know, here's an unprecedented level of home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And who's against that? You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when you say, well, maybe people are buying houses that shouldn't be buying houses. And they say, yeah, but the percentage of, you know, an unprecedented level of home ownership is, you know, this is the highest it's ever been, you know. And,
right.
And so you want to be, who wants to be a, you know, a naysayer by saying, yes, we should, those people shouldn't be in houses. You know, it's against, who wants to be against motherhood and apple pie and home ownership?
Right.
So same thing, you know, it's like if you say, well, maybe you're not doing open government so quite as well as we think we are. Maybe we're being a little too optimistic about how we're going about it, or we're not failing small enough, things like that, then
right. There's little to argue with the goal of increasing public participation, with enhancing trust in government, with giving citizens a greater feeling that if they participate, they can in fact make a difference in their communities, in their states, in their regions, in their country. Those are all excellent goals, but the question ultimately is democratization, is openness and transparency and participation as a quantity measure what we're looking for, or should we be more concerned with quality? And if we are going to be more concerned with quality, we have to be concerned with how likely we are to see that in the future, near term or long term, that citizens will ultimately lose faith, that their expectations are not met, and thus be worse off than they were moving into this this era of experimentation and innovation within the participatory arena. And so part of the question, as I said, was what how prepared citizens are to enter into this arena, but also how prepared government officials are. And that's the other set of questions I raise in my essay, largely from a research perspective and an experimental perspective. How qualified and how ready is government? Are these agencies to receive this increase this increase in participation? Do government officials have the skills that they need, for instance, to facilitate online dialogue or to analyze the page upon page, thousands of pages of text data that come from blogs and wikis and Facebook pages and other tools that the administration is using to allow citizens to give their feedback? What method are they using to analyze all of that text? Right now, you pointed out there are two days left for citizens to go and offer comments on the open government plans for the various federal agencies.
Three days.
The process that they're using there, in part, it's not really clear if someone in each of those agencies will read every single comment that is listed, or if they're just going to pay attention to those that are voted most popular by other users of the tool, of the mechanism, in which case this participatory process becomes one of a popularity contest potentially rather than a process of identifying high-quality ideas, credible ideas, innovative ideas.
Right.
And as an example of that, the early on in the Obama administration, they convened what they called an electronic town hall meeting, where the president convened a town hall meeting that was broadcast and streamed live on the Internet. Questions were received through the Internet in the days leading up to the event. Citizens could go, log in, write a question, and then vote on what questions they thought the president ought to answer. And the number one most voted question, the most popular question, was, do you think the legalization of marijuana is an effective or could be an effective economic stimulus? That was the number one voted question. And the president, to his credit, to a point, I guess, is answered the question with a very succinct no, was his response, but that was also a stark contrast to the very detailed responses he gave to questions he deemed, to be more worth his time and more legitimate questions to ask. So here again, the president obviously thought that the idea was not worth discussing. Maybe the idea is or is not, that's something to have another conversation about perhaps, but the point here is whether or not voting on these to focus attention on decision makers on the most popular is really the best strategy to use, or if there should be some more in-depth process to determine really where are the good ideas, where are the gems inside the mess that's emerging with these hundreds or thousands of comments that are received, and that may not be worth any consideration whatsoever.
Well, we have. I know there's someone calling in who has had some experience in that area as a moderator on one of the agency citizen idea platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to pull him into the discussion and see what his perspective is on that. And before I do that, though, I do want to point back to your paper. I think it's on page 2, just so the listeners, other people listening to this, page 2 of your paper, down near the bottom of that, it says, despite the impressive experimentation and innovation, and then it goes on from there. But I wanted to point back to your paper so people can see the good parts, you know, the part where we were talking, like what you were just talking about. And we can, and then you have first, second, third, fourth, and actually there's a typo here, Tom.
Oh.
you missed fifth. So fifth should be sixth. And then lastly, you talk about the democracy bubble. But I want to bring it back to those points. But I'm going to bring in who I believe here is Barry Everett. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Stephen?
Okay. That's great. I'm glad you could join us today. I assume you've been listening. And I wanted, since you're of an older generation like I am, who've been using technology and so forth, and I think we're both history buffs. That we the older you get, the longer picture, or the bigger the picture, and the longer you look back as far as how things go. So that I think there's been some bubbles in the past, say 20 years, as far as technology goes, as communication, meaning the internet and so forth. That's, I know a lot of people this past year just learned that the internet had been around for 40 years, but I've only been online about 20, and I think you've been on longer than that. But in any event, go ahead and introduce yourself. I'll leave it to you to describe what you've been doing to people out there. So go ahead and give you a little intro there, and we'll pick back up where we were talking about.
All right. My name is Barry Everett, and I'm a computer specialist for the federal government at this time. I've been with the government about 20 years. Before that, I was in technology for about the 20 years prior to that. So me and Al Gore did not invent the internet. We just use it a lot. And if we talk about bubbles, yes, I think that there have been public involvement bubbles, at least over my lifetime. And I'm not sure that they're related to technology. I'm not sure that they're related to either innovations or attempts to increase communication that is currently underway with the Open Government Initiative. However, Stephen, you and I talked earlier this morning about participation or democracy type bubbles that where the public has raised expectations, and every new administration brings that. And some of the press call it the honeymoon period, the first 100 days, the first 500 days, etc. But that's always been around. That was around in Adams and Jefferson's day, probably even more so than now. And there's also a lot of fear and trepidation about changes or about expectations that a new, quote, innovative type of administration would bring in. And that's always been around as in the history of the country. But I do take a little bit of, not exception, but curiosity about the apples and apples concept of identifying an economic type bubble or a housing type bubble with one that we're discussing now, where the public may have higher expectations and may be able to be fulfilled. If I lose faith in one of the forms of open government or even an entire administration, because I have bought into or have participated in the conversation and am somewhat disappointed by it, either way, at least in that type of a bubble burst, I won't lose my house and my life or my economy will not be altered for a long period of time. I can try another concept or sit out for 4 years and come back again with a new initiative for trying to participate at some level in government if I really want to do that. So these types of bubbles are somewhat different in their impact. But in terms of the current process, there's quite a bit of discussion over the last year, a lot of forums, a lot of talk on both sides, a lot of discussion in the 15-second news media that we'd have to deal with today about the validity or the promise of the Obama administration and the Open Government Initiative in particular. And once again, there are some parts of that potential bubble bursting are not anything new. They're only new in the tools or in the methods of communication that are being used. I think that I think you mentioned that I am a moderator on one of the current forums for participating or going forward with the Open Government Initiative. And that's the one that will end up on Friday the 19th. And our agency has has had 177 ideas, not all of which are great. In fact, not all of which are ideas at all. They're questions about other issues with our agency, or even not related to our agency. And some of the agencies have moved those to an off-topic area in order to try to keep the waters clear for the current discussion. Our agency decided in an attempt to make things as transparent as possible to leave a lot of the ideas in place if people wanted to discuss them, and also to provide what we call active moderation, whereas we didn't sit back and only come in and do things if somebody had violated the rules or had made an attempt to move the topic totally off the page. We tried to engage people who were making comments that were either not clear or were clearly off the topic to come back to the discussion. And of course, the current discussion is, by the way that the directive is written, that the agencies have a period of 6 weeks to gather information and ideas and discussion to assist them in writing their own open government plans, which are then to be due to OMB, Office of Management and Budget, on April the 7th, which is the next part of the schedule. A lot of people talk about this being a rush. I say it's long overdue. I do agree with the discussion here that a year is enough to have some ideas about both the successes and the pitfalls for any of the programs that any administration brings on, and there are certainly valid arguments on both sides for the open government initiative. I think that the current process, like many processes that the administration may have not have counted on, that the same technology that worked in a lightning round type of situation during the election, when they were able to garner massive amounts of communication and even in dollars and public participation during the election, were somewhat stifled by the necessity of the way that processes work to implement technology within the federal government. That's one problem that has slowly been overcome. I think the schedule has been tuned a little bit to take into consideration that we are still a bureaucracy and that the wheels do move slower out of public law than they have for things in the private sector. I think that, not miscalculation, but I think that the impact of what the people's expectations were and are, and that this is all new for all of us, both participants from the public side and certainly those of us in the government who, even though we've been on the bandwagon or been in the open government arena before the directive or even the Obama administration came into being, we didn't know exactly how these things were going to play out in the public arena or within our own agency, for that matter. I think another thing that has somewhat stifled or slowed the process once it gets started is an overestimation of Congress and their participation and support for this particular program or any of the programs currently under consideration. I don't think that any of us were prepared that there would be hesitancy to move forward on things where it's obvious that we would like more people to be more involved in public decisions, in rulemaking discussion, in providing an opportunity for the public to have listening posts or discussion forums of all types, ongoing, short-term, et cetera, that some of the processes that we are trying to overcome are so entrenched that it's difficult to move some organizations and some participants out of the, quote, old
comfort zone.
Spin. Right.
The comfort zone. And actually, that's a point that Tom makes in his paper. Like I said, I was referring people to that section on page 2 where he makes a number of concerns. But, Tom, you say that, first, do government officials have the skills needed to meaningfully and successfully engage citizens? And as Barry was just pointing out, it's not just the people in the executive branch and the federal agencies. Here you had, for instance, last summer, during the August recess, when we think back to the quote-unquote town hall meetings, I hate that term, that congressmen were holding about the mostly about the people were very concerned about the healthcare reform package or packages or proposals at that point. And so, as we all remember, there was quite a very high level of participation at those meetings, a very high attendance level. Now, I think nobody can say that the quality of engagement was probably, I think, was on view, at least what we saw on TV. That doesn't mean every single town hall meeting at that time was as boisterous, but of course the boisterous ones are the ones we saw on television and so forth. But there was quite a bit of discussion amongst public participation practitioners about how those meetings were being run. And the typical meeting seemed to be, you know, a congressman went to, in the old days or beforehand, they were used to going to some senior citizen center, and people would ask questions nicely, and the congressman would be the moderator. He'd run the meeting and ask the questions at the same time, and that's easy when you're getting a lot of easy questions or things like that. But when you have a room full of passionate and concerned people about that, I think it showed that the skills necessary, at least in my opinion, and I think others too, that they needed better skills, or perhaps even the skills of a professional to hold the meeting, a neutral moderator, instead of running the meeting and being the moderator at the same time, which you can't. I personally don't like that, because then it means the moderator gets to tell. He can interrupt them at any particular time, as the president did at the White House recently when he got to interrupt people, but they didn't get to interrupt him. So but that's that. Tom, do you want to spout it out about that? But I mean, that seems to point to the idea that being prepared to deal with, you know, once you invite people to a meeting per se, you know, be prepared to deal with the people that show up.
Right.
And not just say, everybody show up and we'll figure out how to run the meeting when we get there.
Right. It's an excellent point on how to best prepare the citizenry to participate through these different mechanisms, either face-to-face mechanisms or technology-mediated mechanisms. How do we educate those citizens? I'd like to offer a quick response to Barry, your good point about comparing apples to apples, a bubble in a housing market versus a bubble in participatory democracy, where one has a much more immediate and dramatic effect on an individual and an individual's family and livelihood than the other. And I would agree with that, certainly in that short-term immediate, where someone clearly loses their home, that's a problematic outcome of any kind of a crashing economic bubble. But I want to make sure that we don't diminish the importance of a crash in trust in government and a crash in the feeling that citizens can actually make a difference. Research has shown a correlation between active citizenship and strong community, this idea of social capital within a community, and a strong economy. So if we do have one, we can support the other. So there is a relationship between between that trust in institution, trust in each other, and an economy that supports the different different segments of the population. But beyond that, lack of trust is it would not just be restricted to the federal government, but in fact would trickle down. And I don't like to make arguments based on an N of one anecdotal story, but this is a useful anecdote. Here in Florida, I was involved in designing and facilitating a public participation process in for a community that was considering whether or not to incorporate. It was a community of about 75,000 individuals that was split between two rural counties in central Florida. And they wanted to know if it would be feasible and desirable from their perspective to become a city and then form their own local government. Part of my job was to go out to these communities, to these individuals living in the area, and describe the study process and solicit input on their vision for the future of the community and so on. And I was greeted, particularly in one segment of the population within this community, with accusations that I was biased, I was pursuing an agenda, that I was being dishonest, that I was hiding something. And when I pushed on that a little bit and I said, well, you know, you've just recently met me. I've given you all the information that we have on this study. I'm being fully transparent. Everything I know, you know, and so forth and so on. The response I got was, well, all we have to do is look at what's happening in Washington, D.C., and see that government officials cannot be trusted, and I know that you can't be trusted either. So that's the generalization that occurs for some citizens between that high level of that low level of trust in the national government and how that translates into a low level of trust and desire to participate locally is something that we really do need to pay attention to. So I would just offer that corrective that we shouldn't diminish the importance of citizen trust. And if, in fact, we have a bubble bursting in that regard, it can be quite debilitating for a local economy.
I don't disagree with that at all, Tom, but I think that along with, in fact, I've looked over some of the other agencies' forums during this six-week period, and a lot of the ideas do address, you know, more staff, better training for the people communicating or point of contact for the different government agencies and programs. Mm-hmm. So those are issues that we're going that inside our agency and our the people who are participating inside the government are going to have to address, and some of those people are just going to have to retire because they aren't going to make the transition. But that's true of any progression in government, you know, whether it's economic or otherwise. The other thing is that along with that, the people themselves also have to stick it out. They have to be tough. They have to sacrifice. They have to work. Mm-hmm. We are now in a culture that gives 15 seconds, not 15 minutes of fame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the spin is so fast, and the bites are so quick, and the thought is not there, the analysis is not there, as to if somebody says something, if somebody blogs something, if somebody writes something, if it's a bald-faced lie or if it's the absolute truth cast in metal, in stone, written in stone, it becomes immediately accessible over markets, over web, iPhones, and whether it's true or not, it doesn't go past that 15 seconds of immediate carpet, you know, absolute dispersal to everyone. You see it, in some days we're going to wind up seeing it as posters on the sides of buses within 15 seconds because they'll have LCD pages out there and they'll say, so-and-so says this, and then they move on to something else without once thinking about where it came from. Is that really true? And what, who say it, and what are they getting out of it, or what are they not getting out of it? So we have to, one of the things that I try to practice with what I call the act of moderation is to stop, take a breath, analyze, take your personality out of it for a second, even though these are very personal issues. I mean, healthcare and economics and jobs is extremely personal to everybody, it should be. take a step back, take a breath, and start back in, but you can't do it in 15 seconds. You got to dig into it. You got to find some research to help people find an answer or to find a question. And you do it face-to-face, whether that's online or in a brick-and-mortar meeting or on a web call. You know, I mean, it's hard work. What did we say earlier, Stephen, we were talking about this, and you said, you know, comedy is hard. Well, so is government. So is public participation.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of work to do, and that's all of us. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like a good marriage. If you're not willing to fight and fight fairly, then you're not willing to stick it out, you know, and you're not willing to reap the benefits of a partnership like that. And the same thing is with public involvement and open government.
And I think that's a good point, talking about marriage, because the relationship, I think, is, and you could even use that comparison with marriage, where, as I think, and I've been married 28 years, and so there have been rough patches, and it just makes me appreciate the words of the minister who counseled us before we got married way back. Communication, communication, communication. Keep talking. Keep the conversation.
Yeah.
And of course, what they mean is they don't mean yell at each other more. It means he's talking of the quality of communication. Keep talking.
Yeah.
Keep the lines of communication open, and also doing it in a way that, so you, if you can understand what the other person's expectations are, and you can explain to them what you're trying to do to make them happy, and how they can tell you how you're trying to make them happy, then we can have this relationship, and you can compare it to the government, where we're trying to help the people in the government are trying to make life better for the people outside the government, and at the same time, they want to keep their jobs, and everybody wants to make everybody happy. And it's just a matter of how you do that and the best way.
Yeah.
And I think what has happened, you know, is that we're at a place where the mistrust and the lines of communication are broken or are at a level that nobody's happy with. And so it's how do we get to another place? And it means learning how to be a better communicator, how to be a better listener. And that's mostly the case when you're yelling at each other. Nobody's listening. And the people that Tom was talking about when he was trying to help those people, he was trying to explain to them what how to incorporate and what their options were and so forth and so on. And they had apparently, some of them, I'm not saying all of them, but apparently some of them had already made up their mind that because he was not from there, he was not to be trusted in any way. And
A harder task to do than try to moderate a group of medium-sized community like that about the thing about incorporation. You know, I have a little place out in a tiny little town out in West Texas, and I can guarantee you that if it ever comes up out there, it will be a dog and pony show and a dog and cat fight. You know, and people will come already with their minds already made up, and that's also what we're running into now. You know, I mean. If you take the red and blue out of it, and you know, and go back to friends that are also political enemies. I mean, I go back and think to Adams and Jefferson. If we could take the model of those two great Americans, you know, who were so close and so important in the way that this whole thing got set up, and were so disparate in terms of some of their thoughts about the way government should be done, about the way that our government should act in the world, but who were so close to each other and had such a bond that had no color and no party, really, when it got down to just those two, they were so finely tuned that they died within 3 hours of each other, you know? I mean, to me, that's a metaphor for fighting fair, fighting hard, and also compromise.
And the listening part, which is, I mean, that's the hardest part for all of us when we think we have the answer to something. And we see the world in a certain way, and of course that's called, you know, a paradigm. But it's very hard to admit that the world as you see it is maybe not what is true. And the Open Government Directive, rather the Open Government Memorandum, talks about that much more, because if you look at the Open Government Memorandum that the President signed on his first day in office, it says, as you go forward and as you look at you meaning the federal agencies, that you should be checking as you go along. It's a transparent, participatory, and collaborative. You look at those three things. The fourth one that runs through all of those is feedback. Ask people how you're doing. And unfortunately, having worked in Washington for 25 years, I know it's very hard to admit or to listen to the little people, because if you're going along, for instance, in this, is probably a bubble on open government, is that you think you're riding high and doing all these great things and so forth, but if you don't pull over to the side of the road every once in a while and check the map and see where you're going, then you're just going to go sailing off, and people in the back of the bus, so to speak, will be mad because you didn't ask them where they wanted to go. And so that's the weakest, to me, that's the weakest point, is that the culture of Washington is against feedback, against acknowledging feedback. And if they can recognize that, I think they'll be on their way. And as we are approaching the, I think we have like 4 minutes left, so I'll let Tom is, if there was, if you, give each of you a couple minutes, or at least let's say a minute, and we'll see how much time we have left, because it'll shut off after at the top of the hour. But Tom, is there something you wanted to, you haven't been able to spit out yet, or that you wanted to point to in your paper about?
Steve, as last time, I enjoy this conversation, and it's a topic that can keep us talking for several hours rather than just 1 hour. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak through these ideas. I'll actually be developing this idea of the bubble, the participatory bubble, and the implications, particularly from an institutional perspective, and what might be done to enhance the quality of participation to prevent a bursting bubble, in a paper I'm delivering at the American Society for Public Administration in San Jose coming up in just a couple of weeks. And a few weeks after that, I'll be presenting a same or similar paper at an international conference on deepening democracy in Rosario, Argentina. So I'll be happy to share those papers with you, and you can share them with your listeners, as it is an important conversation as to how we can work as citizens. And I think Barry said it right. We all have an obligation in this, not just government officials and public administrators, but citizens. We all have hard work to do in order to make active citizenship and effective citizenship meaningful and effective. And so I'll advance some of those arguments a bit more in those papers, and I would look forward to any feedback you or your listeners have.
And before the lady tells me 90 seconds. I just wanted to remind people that in the coming weeks, the other two authors, which also cover or overlap on portions of this, I'll be having them on, Steve Kaneshka and J.H. Snyder, who links to those are also at ustransparency.com today. But, Barry, you have like 30 seconds, I think, to point people.
Let me wrap. Quick, we'll be closing down the forum this Friday. We'll be gathering all of our geese and all of our ideas and discussion. We will be executing the open government plan for the agency, along with the other 24 agencies in the project. And once again, this is not a start or a finish. This is a beginning of many, and I hope to promote the concept of active moderation, not only from the agency standpoint, but also from the public. We are in dire need of champions in the public arena to speak up and speak their minds civilly and participate in this project.
Okay, well, thanks. And so I think that's the rest of Open Government Radio for March 16th, 2010. Come back next week. And thank you, gentlemen, for being on, and we'll talk to you later. And that's Open Government Radio, over and out. Goodbye.
Thanks, Steve.